This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
That's the strength of a good designer, is that you find a way to work with their needs and not make something that you think is best for them, but work with something what they think is best for them and find a way to communicate that in your product. My only talent is to like the thing that I'm doing. If you like what you're doing, you can just do it endlessly. And that's how I just continuously I'm improving in my craft. I always make sure that I'm there if someone needs help, or that's the first thing. But I also always want to motivate people to find their way of what works for them, because for everyone it's different.
Today, I'm joined by Julia Mollema, founder and creative director of Analog Agency. With over 15 years of experience, Julian has worked with top brands like Suit Supply, Atomic and Tony Chocoloni, while turning his passion for film photography into a successful digital agency. We'll dive into his approach to branding, how he builds a culture of creativity and quality, and how he balances entrepreneurship with family life. Get ready for insights on crafting brands that truly stand out. Good morning, Julian.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Can you share a little bit where we are today?
Today we are at Analog Agency, based in Amsterdam, right in the center. And it's a lovely day. It's not warm, but it's okay. It's doable, which is great. I hate hot weather in Amsterdam, in the sun, in a city. It's horrible.
But it's also a lovely office. Can you share a little bit about the office and Analog, what it stands for?
Yeah, our office, it's not that big. It's around 100 square meters. It's actually a shop and an agency. That's because we started actually as an Analog camera shop, therefore the name Analog. And at 2 p.m., the front closes. You cannot see it, but we have like a glass wall. And then the shop opens, and then it's busy, very busy. But fortunately, we work separately, so we don't hear too many people, and we can just work quietly. Be very productive and dedicated.
Branding and photography. I was thinking, what's the match for you? Why Analog?
It started as a camera shop, and it was kind of my passion to just, shoot photography. I was experimenting with film photography, and I was buying and selling a lot on Marktplaats. It's kind of like the Dutch eBay. And I constantly was selling my cameras to buy a more expensive one. And during COVID, I had just a lot of free time. And I thought, well, I've been working in the e-commerce field for over 10 years. Why not make an e-commerce for myself? And so I did. And I actually put all of my visions my beliefs into how an e-commerce should behave, should look like, should feel, how the experience should be. And put that into my own shop because I felt like, yeah, I should just practice what I preach. And so I did. And then actually, from the start, the shop was a success. And that's also the connection towards branding, because it's a shop. And if you brand a shop in a certain way, it can be successful, especially in the field where I work in, where you can buy a film camera from eBay or Marktplaats. You can get it for half the price. But because of the branding, because of the experience, the knowledge, everything we add on to kind of like film photography, I think that adds value to your brand.
Can you explain a little bit what branding actually means, what it does?
Branding is, how I see it, is it moves around a product or service. Or if you have this mug, it's just a normal looking mug. If you would put this into the trash, it's trash, it's worth nothing. But if it's in a museum, it is actually worth something. It's around like other pieces, it's well presented, it feels like it has value. And I think branding is that. It's making the world around the product or the service.
Like an identity?
Identity can be a part of it, but it can also be more things. It can also be different kind of touch points. Like identity is, I think, a bit more visual, but you can also have podcasts, for example. That's for me also branding. Also branding for towards like maybe a product or service. So I feel it's bigger than that.
How are the shop, the Analog, and the brand agency connected?
It's that branding. We apply the things that we know from our agency, we apply it to our shop on a small scale. And I mean, the brands that we work for at our agency are way bigger. We're talking about Atomic Ski Wear, for example, or Suit Supply. It's from such a different scale. But I do think there are things that you can learn from it, especially now in this day and age with social media, where someone with only a camera can actually have a crazy following. And I think there's a lot to learn from it. It comes back towards what triggers people to look at your product. Like, what is the thing that, why do people follow you?
Is it like a feeling instead of maybe an identity on itself or altogether?
It's all together, but definitely also a feeling. Yeah. It's hard to explain sometimes. Sometimes I can do it for certain brands and sometimes I can't.
What do you say when you can't? Do you have moments where you say, I can't give back the project? Or is it that you already know from the start that you actually will make something for a client?
Yeah, I would definitely always make something, but it's more the road towards that thing. And I think that's the beauty of good branding. It's something, or like a good identity. It's creating something unexpected. It's something which feels new, obviously depending on kind of the project, but most of the time you want to create like a new identity, a new feel for a brand. So usually it's something new, something refreshing, but just refreshing enough that it's still recognizable.
You have a shop. It's open now for a couple of months. Your office altogether, it's 6 months. You started 4.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Also past COVID. How's life treating you at the moment? Because you're also a parent and one is coming up.
Yeah.
How's life treating you?
It's good. Yeah, constantly juggling with time. And obviously, we're going into a rough time now with the new baby coming in 1 month. But I think I feel more comfortable now than before when we just started because, yeah, things are very uncertain and you don't know what to expect. And now we have our projects going and our shop is running and I can predict already way more. And also, that gives me a bit more ease of taking time off and also not like having to constantly push the boundaries every time, every day. And I think that's really necessary in the beginning of this time now, having a family. And
can you explain how the first period was, especially for people who are listening who haven't yet reached the moment that you say, I can skip some work hours and feel more comfortable?
It's kind of like it's very free, obviously, because you can do whatever you want. A lot of people, they quit their job to do something new. So which gives you a lot of free time. It gives you a lot of opportunities. So that's very fresh, very motivating. I think, yeah, you do have constantly the feeling of there should be something new coming up because project, we're finishing this now up. And yeah, so I would not say anxious, but yeah, just very exciting. I have a strong belief in myself. So yeah. I know everything will be all right, but sometimes you do. You are more frightened than what I am, for example, now.
Mm-hmm. So how does it come that you feel very confident about yourself, that you do a lot of things to bring you forward in the ambition that you're pursuing, and the money runs out, and you have a partner? How do you keep explaining to yourself it will be fine and to your partner? Partner, I mean a private partner.
Yeah. I think from a young age, I always believed in myself. I think when I started school, like a graphic design school, I went to MBO, it's the lower degree. I actually did not know what it was I was applying. I like to draw, so I just applied. But I think from that moment already, I always felt like what I was doing at that school, it was at a very low degree, and I felt always I could do better. And I always got very excited by my own projects. And I think also I was very shy. So the things I did, I always did it for myself. There was not really someone who just looked over my shoulder and said like, wow, this is great. You should do this or you should do that. It's always myself and constantly, I don't know, like I always got like interested in certain things and then I got really into it. And I think that's where also the belief in myself came from. It's always because it came from myself, my own belief. And there was not really someone always like pushing me to do certain things. I think later on in my career, there were certain people. But from the start, it was always on my own. I think that's always been my main driver. Like I'm convincing myself.
And how does it work? Is it like that you constantly push yourself? Or that you try, because there are so many things in the world to be, pursue, whatsoever.
Yeah.
Is it that you constantly focused on this part or that you did many other things? I heard that you also did music, for instance. Yeah. And when do you actually get that moment that you think like, okay, I studied graphic design, but not per se because I knew this was it.
Mm-hmm.
When was there a click?
I think it's because, yeah, and that's why I also have many kind of like creative hobbies. It's mostly because I enjoy to do it. And I think also that's the main thing why I do things, because I enjoy it. I enjoy every day to design. Sometimes even not really exciting things, I still enjoy the part of like just pushing pixels and to make something look good. And I think that's for everything I've been doing. Also making music, for example, it's just because I enjoy it.
What is it that you don't enjoy?
Or don't enjoy? I found out that actually I enjoy everything. Like, it's funny, like when I do financials, for example, I can get really into it. And I actually enjoy that, to make a spreadsheet and to go like track everything. So even things that are not related to creativity, I think I just can get very, very focused on a thing and then I start to enjoy it. I think when I don't like it is to do a lot of things at the same time. I always feel like I should have a focus and then I can enjoy it.
Multitasking, not in your agenda.
No. That's really not for me.
So in the beginning, you said that you were quite juggling with planning and all the to-dos. How is this? Because that's quite multitasking.
Yeah. I think that maybe that isn't like the most fun. But in a way, I think you can also find a focus in multitasking. If you find a flow of like not like focusing too much, but more standing into the background and then having the certain things that you have to focus on, I think that's also a way of focusing.
How do you make that time possible? As in, you have then a certain amount of ambitions,
yeah,
and then a lot of things just happen, life.
Yeah.
How do you compartment these things for yourself so that you actually can pursue work and private life?
Uh-huh.
How do you deal with stress? Maybe that's okay.
Yeah. I don't have stress. It's hard to explain. I did fail with some projects in my life where I had stress, but I also don't do those things anymore. I rarely am stressed out. I am stressed out when I miss the plane. Those are actually the only...
Why is that?
The strong belief that everything, always what I do, will be fine.
So you're also in a responsible position. People also call it leadership. Do you recognize stress with them? And how do you deal with this?
Yeah, I do see it. And it's hard sometimes. Because for me, it's hard to explain how I work, what my way is of not having stress, because someone else is different. So what I try to do is obviously let the person know everything's fine. I always make sure that I'm there if someone needs help, or that's the first thing. But I also always want to motivate people to find their way of what works for them, because for everyone it's different.
And I saw on your website in the job section that Analog focuses on a 6 to 7 hour per day work day. What if you have a person who works on a project with you, sees the 6 to 7, you think it's not necessary to do overwork, which is great, but they feel different.
Mm-hmm.
How does this balance go?
You mean like people feel they have to work more?
Well, because they're stressed because they're not reaching, for instance, the targets for the project or the potential. They're stressing because the clock is ticking. Everyone is going home.
Yeah. Because now we moved to 7 hours, but I can talk about that later. When we had 6 hours, no one was really like, oh, we're not going to make it. And that is sometimes the thing where I think like, okay, I don't feel stressed, but I do know when I need to put in more hours. And there were times where I thought like, well, obviously we're not there yet. You're going home, which is your choice. But I do know that it's not like where I want to be. And that was mostly what was happening a lot. And then to come back to those 6 hours, I think people who work here, they can do things really well, like design really well, like be very creative, but they don't have nothing to do with business. And that makes sense because that's why also they work here. They just focus on design. And I think with those 6 hours, it was kind of like a friction point where we constantly had this like, okay, everyone goes home, but I still want the quality. And so we said like, now we're going to move to 7. You still can go home when you want at 4. Like if you want, if you don't feel it or you just want to go home, you can go. But you just have to ask and we can check with the planning if this is doable or not. And everyone was okay with it. and still people go earlier. Not that often that I was expecting. So you say 6, people leave after 6 hours. When you say 7, people leave after 7 hours. People, I guess, feel less free than I think they are, which obviously I don't want that to feel that, but I think it's just the way it is.
How do you check it? It's not per se an inquisition, because I admire the approach, but I come from a background where 8 hours is like the minimum.
Yeah.
Do rather more than less.
Yeah.
So I'm just figuring out to make it even more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you say, okay, 6 is maybe not, then we scale up to 7 and people then don't leave at 6, but at 7. Mm-hmm. What if you would say we leave after 8 or 9?
People will not like that. I think they're so used to now like working 6 to 7 hours. You can avoid that by planning the project right, having good leadership. I think we skip a lot of steps because I help a lot and I go really in detail with helping sometimes. I hope that people reach a certain point that they can also do things quicker. But yeah, if you have the experience, you can make quicker choices. Yeah, then it's easier to not like go the 8 hours. I made this choice in the end because I felt also when I worked at the previous company where you walk in at 9:30, you go home at 6. And I was at least not working 2 hours a day, like with lunch, with like bantering, with checking news. And even at one point, like it was up to maybe 3 or 4 hours. And also I get really demotivated myself because I want to stay in the flow. And if I know, oh, I have so many hours still to go, I can also just relax a bit. And then, you know, you go out of it. And then I'd rather say, okay, then we work 6 hours. You get into the flow for 6 hours. And then you do the things that you like. And I think, yeah, if I can do that, why, I guess everyone can do that too. Yeah.
Did everyone in that company had the same feeling of doing 2 hours nothing, for instance?
No.
Like a little island?
Yeah. After the years, I found out I actually, like, I know some people do it as well, but I wasn't, yeah, not a lot of people do it. And also here, like, sometimes I'd look at the screen and they're always working. Always on the job, which is great. I mean, I would love to do that too, but I'm very quickly distracted. If I know, like, okay, I still have to do these things, I already have in my head what I want to do, I'm going to do other things now. I'm very quickly distracted. So also this way of thinking, like, you can do things in 6 hours. Maybe that's not for everyone.
Did you sometimes talk with your team about it? What do you need? Do you actually ask these questions, for instance?
No. We never have team meetings, for starters. But I do individually go to the person. And obviously, we talk about work. We talk about what we want to do. Also, we have meetings about like what they want to reach. But not this particular subject, how you can do that.
What do you think would happen if you would ask a person in a one-on-one, hey, what do you need to excel your talent? Your potential.
Oh, no, I do have those meetings. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I thought it was like a reverse question where how can I be more focused like them? But no.
Oh, no. No tricks in this one.
No, we have like meetings about like people, how to improve. And I try to guide as much as possible. Also give as much resource as possible to them to grow. Also give them the right projects to do the things. Very busy with trying to...
People management.
I would say talent. Like Rolf is more the people manager, or like the people guy. I'm more about the self-development in work. Rolf is the managing director. Yeah, he's the co-founder. He does the financials. He talks with the people. And that's how we kind of like balance things out. But he's obviously also a lot involved in the creative process. Also a lot in the strategy for projects. He has a very different view on things. Also a lot like the normal view. As a creative, you always are a bit like trying to find a new thing. And he's more, yeah, like a regular person. Which is good because you need that. You need someone who has like, that vision of like an everyday person, like interacting with your brand.
You started 4.5 years ago with him as well.
Yeah.
How did you meet?
We were already friends for 10 years, maybe even longer. We were making music together, which was really fun. And obviously we had our own day jobs, so we had to like compromise. But then at one point, like, he was kind of finished with his job. The shop was running well, and I thought, like, I need help, so please help. And then he got involved and really, scaled it to a new level. So that's how we...
Does he like the job? How is he involved in branding? Could it also be something different? How is he related to your expertise?
He really enjoys watching how creatives go from a briefing towards something tangible. He really enjoys that process. I think that's one of his main drivers. Obviously, he likes also to be free because of having an own agency. We have the tendency to do a lot of things at the same time. So we're also working on a new camera, for example. And then he's also very busy with that. And he goes a lot to China, also from his previous work experience.
What did he do?
He was in retail. So worked for big retail companies, going to China, check products, importing them to the Netherlands. That's his background. So products focused, really. And then that's also something where we want to focus on more and more. I think we know what it takes to create a product and to brand it and to release it. So
sounds like a match made in heaven.
Yeah, but it's a slow process, obviously, but we're getting there.
He's more the people person. You're more about the talent. And you mentioned that you provide resources or ways. What kind of ways do you provide to your people?
For starters, it's the working hours. So planning things right. Obviously, we need to survive. So we cannot have an endless amount of hours, but we try to give a bit more air to the project so we have a bit more room to breathe. We have meetings about like, how can you improve? I also try to push people in that direction. So if someone wants to get better at presenting, I'm trying to get them present more projects. Those are the things, but also getting the fastest MacBook. I always hated that at a previous company, I get a computer, but it was not the fastest because I feel like if you cannot like put your ideas on paper and if there's lag because of computer, that is...
I fully agree.
That's
process.
Yeah, that's a creativity killer. So getting the fastest MacBook, getting a good coffee machine, just to get like everything they need.
Do you always succeed? Because it costs a lot of money to always have the top-notch tools.
Yeah.
And I see your team, it's bigger than you anticipated when you started in this office.
Yeah.
But it also means that everyone needs more. How do you juggle with this? And how much freedom do you have yourself between creativity and commercial demands?
Yeah, we always find our way. Like, we try to get like the best working environment, but we also are pushing the projects, obviously. We are trying to get like clients in, and I'm not gonna say we're 100% creativity driven. We're also commercially driven because we need to survive, and especially in this day and age where competition is crazy, and also there are not that many projects at this point. So you need to invest in that to also to survive, to get this thing still running.
I was quite amazed about what you do, how young the office is. I'm quite aware of how much competition you have, and I only see the tip of the iceberg. Why do they come to you, the clients?
I think there are many ways. For starters, we present ourselves in a way like that we are delivering quality. We are delivering a good identity, a good website. Everything is spot on. I think that's the base, honestly. Then you have a part of recognition. That's something we're constantly working on because in the end, brands want to work with known agencies. For example, we lost the pitch to Pentagram. Everything was...
Well, that can happen, right?
Yeah, that can happen. But and actually...
It's not the smallest one.
No. But it obviously was because it's Pentagram. So also the founder of that company said like, well, you're doing everything right, but you know, you're competing against Pentagram. So it's also an image.
What is your response in such a way?
Well, I get it, obviously. I mean, Pentagram is obviously the best of the best. Every company is different, what their needs are, or if they really believe in what we do. What I do notice is that I am getting noticed more and more on LinkedIn and on Instagram. And we had clients in the past, because they know they work with me, they know like, oh, I'm going to expect the best of the best. And then we actually got one time a project where they believed in me, but he also wanted to give a free pass on towards the work that we created for them. And actually, I guess he was not really excited at the end result because it is maybe different than what he thought he was going to get. I still believe in the work and it is very good, but because he was so vague at briefing and more like, oh, I just leave it up to you. And I think he had a really clear image what he wanted, but he just didn't want to share it because he thought like maybe his ideas are going to be better.
What was your response?
We had talks about it, like why didn't you brief it a certain way? And I think that should be always the case. First time it really happened because like, oh, I'm going to work with analog. But in the future, we're going to always say like, yeah, but please be as specific as possible. If you have a certain idea which you want to accomplish, please let us know. Because yes, we could make a better idea, but we need to know what your thoughts are, like your starting point. So, but that's the lesson that we learned from that.
Is that also the lesson for others? That they, although you hear carte blanche, sandbox scenario,
no.
I would say it sounds great, but make it tight,
yeah,
brief.
Yeah, I think there's never really a carte blanche. There's always a certain taste or like certain idea that maybe not visually, but also maybe at a strategic level, you just want to know as much as possible from the client.
What are your experiences so far in the 4.5 years that you started in COVID? Are you now at a moment that you hoped it will be after 4.5 years?
Yes and no. I always have the dream to become bigger and better.
Then?
Yeah, then now. But on the other hand...
Or pentagram.
Maybe a bit smaller, but yeah, on one hand, you want to grow and you want to get bigger. On the other hand, I'm sometimes thinking like, why grow big? Because with this small team, you can do the same. I see a lot of agencies now also failing because they're too big and they need to, you know, get the clients in. And well, what I see a lot at other agencies is that you have a few key players, maybe a team of 10 people in the end, maybe 8. And those are the main players of that agency. And when they grow, they get their team bigger, but it's not per se that the quality gets bigger or the quantity increases. And then I always think like, yeah, but then you can just also stay at that 8-person team, really invest in that and go on with your day and still reach the same things that you want to reach.
Would that be the strategy right now, the approach?
Definitely for now. Also, I see...
You don't have space in the office.
No, I don't have space, but also I think... yeah, this year, it's not been a good year. I see like a lot of agencies struggling. And one of the things is just because they're too big.
How was it for you until so far? We're 6 months further. Is it a good year for you or do you feel similar to...
Yeah, it's a very good year. I do notice we get less emails from new business. Sometimes you have weeks where it's just constantly like new things going on and that's less and less. Like we're still like fully booked. We still can choose from our projects. So for now, it's good. But I do notice that if I don't have that, then I guess other agencies also don't have that. And I also hear that like from other agencies that it's tough.
So you worked at Build in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
How different are you working now than you did there? Because it's not a small office.
Yeah, the office is also quite big and they have a big team. There are in ways we are different. There are also in ways that we are very similar. Obviously, I've been there for such a long time. I also think the same way about things. So quality and like the end result is always the most important thing. I think that's the same for Build Amsterdam. I think, yeah, obviously we're smaller, so we're a bit more agile. I think they're doing good and...
Do you also feel competition or such?
How
are you?
Yeah, we do hear clients who go to them and they go to us and they kind of then, yeah, obviously then it's a competition. Then it's like, okay, who are you going to choose?
But good friends.
Yeah, still good friends. I still see the founders, Tim and Dan, I see them sometimes. It's obviously sad to leave. I mean, I had a really good time there, but I also felt like I want to, you know, be free to explore and see what I can do because I really enjoy the thrill of having a company. Now, I think that's something you never understand or like back then I already had the shop, so I knew what it feels like. Mm. What you need to do, like the excitement you get when you are successful. And I felt like you can never have that if you stay in a company and even if you are a partner or such. Because you always secured by people above you. And I just wanted to release that, to be free and to explore. And
although you had a lot of freedom.
I did, but not business-wise.
Right.
So I had nothing to do with the business. I think it's different if you have your own company and you feel like, oh, we should really nail this project because this is the only thing we have going on right now. Rather than if you work at a company and they say to you, we should really nail this project because it's different. It's like you don't feel that excitement or that thrill at all. You're just thinking like, okay, I'm just trying to do my best.
Do you also translate this feeling that you have, and we don't have a camera, but you actually get excited in your body language about, yeah, it's my take, responsible and fixing also commercial. Yep. Do you translate this feeling as well to your people here in the office under the topic individual growth? Because you mentioned that the previous office, you did the projects and you wanted to excel.
Yeah.
Now you're a company, yes, you want to excel. Do you also take them on in your slipstream, say like, I know that you're working on the project, but in general, if you want to feel the real excitement that I'm doing?
Not yet. It's I've been thinking about it because I do feel, if someone wants to be an entrepreneur, they should definitely try it. But I also think a lot of people don't want that. They just want security, or they just want to really focus on design. With the team now, I don't have the feeling someone is at the point where they really want to be free and really be an entrepreneur. But if the time comes, I would always motivate them. And I've been thinking about a way, because obviously we also want to, because I've been teaching them for such a long time, I still want to be in the loop. So if they have ideas, or maybe they are a product they want to release, we can obviously help them in community building, product engineering, branding. And I think maybe a joint venture could be an idea for that, for example. But we're not at this point yet.
I saw on your website that you're family bond and that you focus on it, but you're super much focused on community building as well.
Yeah.
Those two are quite different.
Although
a lot of people in leadership think it's the same. And how do you?
I would definitely not a family. I think I always think like, if you have to say that you are, then are you? I always feel it's a bit superficial. I also feel like the people here, they were not the family. Everyone goes home at 5. We rarely have drinks. So everyone is like, I think it's also maybe a bit of the generation, Gen Z. They just like to just not like to hang out too long. But we're definitely not. And I think we do have a bond. Like, we are at a very personal level. We have fun. We're definitely not corporate, and definitely not like, there's like levels. So I think that's more of the family bond we have, but not more than that.
Do you see yourself as a mentor? Or did you had one that you feel like, wow, that was so necessary for me? Or
yeah, I think at Build, obviously, I had a good mentor. I was every day working with Dan and Tim, and I think they both guided me a very good direction. I think I'm trying to also guide the people here as much as possible, but I also know that it takes more than that sometimes. You have to get involved at a really detailed level sometimes, especially with younger designers, to really guide them towards where they want to reach. And I think that was maybe a bit of a different style towards Dan and towards me, where Dan from Bills in Amsterdam, he was more saying the things that he didn't like, and sometimes not like things where it should go towards, where he sometimes are puzzled like, okay, that's where we have to go now. Where I'm always showing the road to where to go, and sometimes I'm showing it too much, where it's too much for their own good, because they obviously also need to learn from the process. So that's my downfall, that I get involved too much.
When do you recognize such a thing in the process? Is that something that other people will tell you, like Ralf? Or?
No, that's what I notice myself. Like, when I see certain design choices that I just quickly did by showing where they need to go, and then I see it at the end product, and I think like, well, we could have spent a bit more time on this, but if it works, it works, obviously. But on the other hand, Maybe I showed them too much, where they think like, okay, well, this is fixed. I don't need to improve any of this part of the design, for example.
So you talked about Gen Z, and a lot of people talk about Gen Z and vice versa, which is good. Mm-hmm. But there seems to be a lot of difference between perspectives, expectations, and such.
Yeah.
Do you have the feeling that you're speaking the same language, or do you invest a lot of time in trying to understand how they see and feel? Because emotions in your work and in life seem to be very important for you.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not from the Gen Z generation, so it's just really different. But I'm very open-minded about it. I understand they feel their health is more important than work, which is good. I mean,
we could learn something from them.
Yeah, definitely. And that's okay, I think. And maybe a future generation is an answer to that, where they go full on work, for example. I don't know. I'm just saying something. But I do think if you want to be a really good designer, you have to put the hours in. And if you're not going to do that for different kind of reasons, and obviously that is fine because everyone should work their own way. But it is just a fact that if you don't put in the hours, you're never going to reach the point where you maybe where you want to go to.
How many hours is needed? Because I think the same like you, but I question myself at a certain moment, talking with a lot of people from different generations.
Yeah.
It also helps when you're quite rested and not constantly pushed, which is from a different generation before us. How do you see this? Because we are in between.
Yeah. Yeah.
When is enough?
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, myself, I also feel I have not reached that point yet. I'm also every evening still, when I have the time, working on design. So I'm also still learning and I'm still improving. But what I do know is that if you don't do that, and if you only work a certain hours a day, you're never going to get towards that level. Yeah, maybe if you're really talented.
Do you see yourself as talented?
Nah, I think most of what I do is from experience. So just putting the hours in. My only talent is to like the thing that I'm doing. And that's my main driver for everything. And if you like what you're doing, you can just do it endlessly. Why? And that's how I just continuously I'm improving in my craft.
How do you deal, for instance, with disappointment and expectation management?
But I never really clash with clients. I never really clash because that they have an expertise in what they're doing. So they're not saying things just because. And I think that that's the strength of a good designer, that you find a way to work with their needs. And not make something that you think is best for them, but work with something what they think is best for them and find a way to communicate that in your product. And with expectations, obviously when you lose a pitch, you feel sad, or an award, you feel sad, but I don't have that many expectations towards myself, where I'm maybe thinking of the agency should be bigger than this, but it's not going to let me down or anything. That's maybe also, if you talk about other people, is that they do have a lot of expectations, especially the younger generation. They expect that they want to reach this level. They're not reaching it. And then they really get like demotivated because of it. And I think it's also hard. I also don't know how to get out of that. I can say to them, yeah, but don't expect. But if someone by nature does that, yeah, how do you work with that?
You mentioned that you were quite shy in the beginning.
Yeah.
You don't strike me as shy now, but also not like super extrovert. So I have the feeling you've grown over the years. And you work with a lot of clients focusing on their branding. How well do you know yourself?
good question. I think more and more over the years. I think when I was shy, I didn't know myself. So also then, yeah, you get into yourself. Now that over the years I know how I work, and I think that just comes by age. What skill can you say I know 80% of myself? I don't know. Like, it's hard to say.
It's a very open question.
Yeah.
It's maybe not per se finding the answer to it, but how much are you aware of yourself, for instance? How much, well, do you think and research about personal development, and especially when you're now hiring talent,
yeah,
who you want to support?
Yeah. I think because I'm so focused on like the end product, making compromises, I think that's where you're so focused on something else than yourself. I think that's a big part of not knowing myself. I do, on the other hand, know a lot about myself and what I can do, what I can read, what I can't do. I think I know a lot about myself from a social level, mainly because I feel there was a big part when I was younger that I was shy. So how do you deal with that? So that was where I invested time in.
What did you do?
I read books, talked with people. I think it's also a lot finding out. Like when you develop like social skills, you're also going to understand the things that you didn't do before.
Do you talk about it with Ralph a lot?
Not really.
Because you know each other for 10 years. What bonds you apart from the work, because that's what you're doing now?
Yeah, a lot. Obviously, we have the same humor. We talk a lot, but yeah. You know, guys, they don't talk a lot about feelings. That's maybe we should do more. But
I talk a lot about feelings.
Yeah.
But it also comes with age and parenthood.
Yeah, perhaps. Yes,
that helps. Yeah. How much has parenthood? Well, I wouldn't say change, but how do you experience it?
It's fun. It's enjoyable. It's beautiful. I think it takes a certain level of responsibility. I don't have the feeling that I compromised a lot. I mean, I rarely go out anyways, so I mostly stay at home. So for me, it's the same, except then, you're busy with other things at home, obviously. But it's a really, really fun process. And it's funny, like, sometimes I think, like, I have trouble with combining it. And when I want to really spend a long time with my family, then I get really into that. And then I have to get out of that to go back to work. So I sometimes have problems with that. But overall,
How old is the...
3 years.
And the second one is coming in a month.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, it's very... it's going to be...
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great, I think. And at the beginning of my first child, I was like always at nighttime, like helping, and I found out I was really good at that. So I can just help the baby if it's crying and get milk. And I think if you have that base of like sleeping well enough and doing that, then the rest is easy.
Yes.
But I found out I was really good at that, so that saved a lot, like in the first years. And so I think the same will happen if we have a tough baby. But
it's just doing it.
Yeah, it's just doing it. Yeah.
You mentioned the social media that you used it, and on LinkedIn you notice that people through social media find out who you are and want to work with you.
No.
So social media is quite important for you and Analog. The first question is, do you see yourself as a personal brand?
Yeah, I do see it as a personal brand, even though I don't like it.
What's not to like?
That it's focused around you and not like what you make. And I feel also it's a bit, it's hard. I always feel like it's superficial if you have to talk about yourself and what you do. And I don't like that people think about that, about me.
Oh, okay. Because I see it way different.
Huh?
Yeah, because since I know you a bit and I see the different accounts that you have, and on your personal account, you do a lot of AI testing.
Yeah.
The architecture. And design.
Yeah.
So there I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And of course, there's a thought behind it.
Yeah.
And then on LinkedIn, you post a lot about personal development.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's like, I see separately that there's the Analog, the work. And if you say, yeah, but if I'm a personal brand, they don't see what I'm working on. But I do see it.
Yeah.
So for me, it's quite an enrichment that you're...
Yeah, no, but it's different that than like I don't enjoy it that much to be centered about me, but I do think it's necessary. So I do think I should do it. I think it's in this day and age, a founder is more important than the company sometimes. If you go talk about communication, so I do think it's necessary.
We have this Analog Talk account. And you started it as an experiment.
Yeah.
And it was
quite astonishing.
Yeah.
Can you share what it is and why you started this experiment?
Yeah, it started as an experiment. I was a bit done with our agency account, like posting work, really putting the time to make videos of the projects that we did. And it's doing good, but I've always felt like, why do some videos have 1 million views and the others don't? And especially ours, like, I think it deserves more views. Like, it deserves a bigger audience. And that's when the experiment started, because I was looking at some accounts where they grew from 0 to 100,000 followers in a year. And you can say a lot about, like, you look at followers and that shouldn't be important. But I do think it's important, because I do think if you do content well enough, people feel the need to follow you. So you're doing something right. You're doing something that sparks an emotion by someone and then presses the follow button because they want more of that. And I think it's important to understand why that is. Like, why do people like this certain video? And that's why I started experimenting with those videos, because I really wanted to find out, like, what it is. What is the thing that makes Vimeo go viral? And how can you apply that towards us? Because in this day and age, doing advertising is more expensive than ever. And I also saw that it's easier than ever to become really big on social media. So for me, it made sense to invest time in that. And that's how the video started. Now we're, I think, at 4 months and we're at 225,000 followers. We have a big community and we're translating that into more mailings and to get them free guides on topography, colors, that kind of stuff.
You mentioned a lot of questions that you had to when you started the experiment and you explained what you did. Did you also find answers? Like, why did these videos actually?
Yeah. The biggest answer, I found that people are on Instagram to be entertained. Same goes for LinkedIn. Same goes for...
Also educated.
No, yeah. There is a part of education, but are you really getting educated about posts? I feel like it's better to read a book. I mean, obviously there is education. There is ideas, theories, which I try to explain. But the main driver is entertainment. Because education is boring. Like, for me, it's very boring. It's learning something.
It's valuable. It's educate your people.
Yeah, so that's why entertainment comes in. So you entertain mainly, and then with a bit of, you try to say things that are right and try to educate people. And I think it would be maybe 60% entertainment, 40% education.
Yes, that I fully agree.
And sometimes less, sometimes more. But mainly entertainment. And that was the switch for me. Like, also for our analog agency account, like, our main driver here now is inspiration, but it should be entertaining because then it reaches a bigger audience. But on the other hand, like, we also decided to keep the agency account for what it is. It's showcasing our work, getting people inspired, also hopefully getting new business out of it. But the DOC is really about, like, entertaining, getting...
On the first degree.
Yeah, and getting as much following as possible, see what works, see what triggers people. But I think in the end, it learned also a lot on what triggers people at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's an experiment. What's next for this account, for instance?
Yeah.
Because I don't know, you proved something to yourself and it's satisfied.
Yeah, we don't have a
because you have a followership base of 200,000 people now.
We haven't found disappointing them, right?
No. So we keep on making videos. We are trying to monetize it in a way. So my girlfriend said yesterday you should do a Substack. And I thought, well, that's actually a great idea because you can still give valuable information throughout emails. So that's something we're going to think about. Obviously, we have also a lot of other things going on, so we can't too much time on it. But it is a successful experiment, and I think we learned a lot from it. Also, if we're going to do new things or things for a client, I do know now how to set up a proper social strategy and really to a social strategy that is successful. And I think that's super important, especially for startups and for starting brands.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that multitasking is not per se your cup of tea, but you have a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
How do you keep such a thing like this alive with the same quality? Because I can imagine it takes time. You can automate a lot, but I've tried it myself as well. And to a certain degree, okay, it's manageable.
Yeah.
But still, if you're in a team, how much time does it actually cost?
We have one guy, he does the videos full time.
For like the whole week, 5 days.
So it's full, it's a full time job.
Yeah.
I sometimes jump in to help. That speeds up the process a lot.
Because what takes so much time?
Yeah, that takes the most time to make an idea. I think consistency is not that important anymore.
Okay.
It's about really making that viral video. And that's a lot of factors. It's about the right information. It's the timing. It's the visuals you have. It's the music. It's the time where you post. It's luck. Sometimes you just have a video which goes viral on a certain point just because enough people liked it at the same time. And then Instagram sees that and pushes it through the algorithm. But mainly, and that's the main thing, you just have to make content that people like. If you make content to promote something, you lost. That's something people usually don't like. That's why people like entertainment.
How amazed were you about the metrics?
Yeah, super amazed. Like from the start already, it was a big success. And then you can see the followers growing and growing. And then we thought like, wow, this is crazy. I also feel it's kind of a hack. Now in this day and age in Instagram, they shifted their algorithms in a way that this type of content really works. I'm also still waiting till the moment they're changing the algorithm again and you have to start all over again. But for now, you see this working. And it's interesting because this works now really well. Mm-hmm. But other companies, who, for example, push a photo every day, also inspiration, for example, and they have an end product for it. But that content style doesn't work anymore. So now just posting a photo of inspiration. They also have to shift their pros. And I think it's just super interesting, like when that moment is coming and what works, why does it work?
Are you prepared?
No. Well, I'm prepared to change, definitely. Yeah, and we'll have to see. What I find interesting is sometimes the question of, like, I always believe that Instagram's algorithm is not made in a way for, obviously it's for their gains, but it's not made in a way to really do especially what Instagram does. But I do think the algorithm works in a way for people at this day and age. So I think also people are just ready for this type of content now at this point. And why? I don't know. But I feel like people are just way more interested in short, really short, snackable content now. And maybe in a year, that's something totally different. Maybe people like to read again. I don't know. It could be. But I just find it very interesting. And I think Instagram is following that rather than what they are like preaching themselves. But I don't know. It's nowhere written. It's just a thought I have.
Is it so that you see yourself more as a visionary or more problem solver? Because you hacked the algorithm.
Yeah.
But you want to be ahead of the curve, obviously, and that's what you do.
Yeah.
Are you one more or are you in between? How much do you see yourself?
I would say I'm both, but I'm more leaning towards the problem solver side. I think it's good to do both. Like Steve Jobs said one time, you have thinkers and you have doers, and actually the people who are successful are the thinkers and doers. So that always stuck with me. Like you have to do both. You cannot like do one or the other. So I think I am both. I do tend to do more things.
Brings us to the do or die questions, A or B. Are you more rational or romantic?
Both.
More purpose or intuition focused?
Intuition.
And why?
Sometimes I do things and I find the explanation later. I think that's intuition.
The reason why I ask is because purpose is like a theme in branding.
Yeah.
But in life, it's quite hard to... There's like a 50-50. A lot of gurus, if you like, they talk about purpose. But the other side says, finding a purpose. And then that's the holy grail. When will you ever find it?
Yeah.
What do you think about purpose?
I think it's hard to define your purpose because it's shifting constantly. That's why I think doing things on intuition works better for me than really defining a purpose and live by that. But I do think there are people really purpose-driven. They really have their principles and they live that way. But I'm not that.
No. You don't have principles or key values?
I have a few, but I'm very flexible and I
relaxed guy.
Relaxed, yeah. Yeah.
Personal growth or business growth? It's not per se that you need to choose, it's more about.
Yeah. I think personal growth is boring. I think business growth is exciting. For me at least. But I know I have to also focus on personal.
Yes, and you have a lot of people around you who probably think.
Yeah. So both.
Risk taker or conservative approacher?
Risks.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Can you give an example?
It depends, actually. It depends. Like business-wise, a bit more conservative. I think with design, we take risks. We sometimes really believe in something. And sometimes it's a risk, like because we don't know if the client's going to like it. Yeah, so it really depends on the situation.
Team sports or individual sports? Do you actually do sports?
No. I found out from a young age that my hand and eye coordination are really not that great. So I'm not a sports, but I do like to work out. Mm. Actually, this is the first time in my life that I enjoy sports.
Yeah, you look fit.
Thanks.
I walked in and was like,
yeah. Thanks. Well, I think maybe it's the age or something. Like now, suddenly I enjoy it. Like before, I always thought it was a chore. Like, why spend an hour in the gym if you can also design for an hour?
Yes, very recognizable.
Yeah, and now I do see the yeah.
Why do you see it now? What made the difference?
Because you can.
How old are you now?
33.
33.
Yeah. I think it's a way to relax, to do something different than you're used to. It's hard to say actually why I like it.
Yeah, because I also find it interesting that you say it relaxes me because you, through the conversation,
I already relaxed.
Yeah. So how much?
Maybe relax is not the right word for it. Isn't it? It's actually I had never thought about it why I like it. Now I just do it, but. I think 5 years and my girlfriend is a big part of that. I'm way more structured than I used to be, and we have to because we have a family and everything is about structure. And I think by now being very structured or like working towards that, I feel sporting is really fitting into that structure because I don't know, like I think that structure makes you enjoy also the less exciting things, but you know it's good for the greater good. Yeah. I'm trying to find a reason.
Oh, you don't need to find it right now, but you can do that at your own.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking of what's changed before. So that's definitely structure. So maybe that's the reason, but exactly why I cannot say.
Well, the question is, the reason why I ask these questions is not per se to find like the right answer, but about how aware are we, including myself, about what we do, what choices we make, especially when I ask you a question. Yeah. Do you need to ask the question? Do you need to answer it? What's going on?
Yeah.
I find this quite interesting and good to hear about how important your partner is for you. And next to the sports, what can you name one other thing that she helped you with or supported you with that you benefit from in your personal development?
Yeah, more responsibility, I guess, business-wise, but also in my private life. That definitely improved, helped me a lot.
Can you give an example? Because you're home a lot.
Yeah.
So that's one.
Yeah.
But that's because of you. But are you then home or are you?
Yeah, usually I am.
Because I can be home and have a laptop on my.
No.
And then I'm not at home.
Yeah.
People can talk to me, but I.
Yeah. No, I have the same. But I when I'm with the kids, there's no laptop or there's no phone. At least I try. I also notice that when there is, it's game over because I just, I'm not there anymore. So I try to avoid that. And I think that's responsibilities, is that you do things because, you know, it is for the greater good. Like, you want, as a kid, a parent who is fully there, who's involved.
And how do you know?
Because my parents were very much like, well, I'm not saying not involved, but they had their things going on. My father was always working 7 days a week. My mother was, always working as well. So she was home at 7 or 8. I think also very distracted with other things. And I think as a kid, it did turn me into what I am now. But also I feel like it's nice for a kid to have involved parents. It's good. It's you are seen.
Is it also why you're so much focused on talent growth and people management in the office?
I think so. Yeah. I felt not really seen in the past when I was younger. That's why I also did things for myself. That's where the motivation came from.
Hmm.
So I think that's a big driver. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel responsible for this generation and the next?
Responsible what?
Well, for their upbringing in career, for instance. And for instance, also creative industry. Because you were part of the Young Ambassadors from Stedelijk. That's a choice to join, but you can also not do it and focus on your business. What?
Yeah.
Why joining such?
It's an interesting group of people.
What do you do as a group?
Different things like events, like I think there's a lot of people from the creative industry there and also doing something totally different. And I think it's good to get out of that bubble of design to broaden your perspective. So that was one of the main reasons I joined. It's a different environment. You also go to the new office of Sabine Marcellus, and we go there with the whole like group, and she showed like what she did there. And it's just very inspiring. And I think that's a way better environment to learn new things and to learn about new people than at a bar.
Have you contributed to such a group? Why did they ask you to join?
I think back then I had like a startup, a Web3 startup. I think that was just very interesting for the museum because of the whole NFT conversation that totally bombed now. But that was, I think, back then interesting. And I think they try to find a group of people. So maybe I was more towards like a designer that they did not have in the group yet. So that's why.
What's next?
With our shop focused on our own camera, I think that's the right time now. I think for our agency, it's just continuously going. I'm not saying growing because I feel like we're now with a good team and I feel we accomplish what we want to accomplish.
Did you say that growing is it more people?
Yeah.
Because I can also imagine that you grow by investing in the people that you have. Actually, something yeah. that you already said at the beginning. So you do grow.
Yeah.
And the quality becomes higher.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah. So, focusing on the quality of the people that are here now. Yeah.
Are you going to do that?
It takes time. I think they learn the most by experience, guiding them as much as possible. I think also now this, obviously with the baby coming, so I cannot like do too crazy stuff at this point. So I would say the rest of the year for this year, just to go continue what we're doing right now.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Julian Mollema. Julian's journey from experimenting with film photography to leading a digital agency underscores the importance of staying true to your passions while evolving with the times. His philosophy on branding, blending emotion, identity and functionality, challenges us to think about the visual and the focus on creating meaningful experiences. Julian's emphasis on fostering team growth and maintaining balance in a fast-paced industry reminds us that success is as much about the process as the outcome. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button. Rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter and spread the word so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.